Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to the Patrice Brantley Show. We're helping others in the game, and on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. I got to tell y'all, today I am so honored because I get to bring on my friend, my boo, one of the teachers that I worked with when I was back in the classroom, way back in the day. I get to bring on Mr. Ed Padel. I got to tell y'all, when I met Ed, he was definitely a breath of fresh air. Here was the problem. He was trying to make me exercise, and y'all know how I feel about that. But enough about that. It was an amazing experience for meeting him from the beginning, and it has been beautiful ever since. So I just want to welcome him in, and just I want him to share with us what it's like to be a teacher in this time and what's going on and what's happening in his life. So welcome, Ed.
Thank you. Thank you.
So give a little bit about you. Tell our audience, what's your story?
Well, I've been in education for over 40 years, started as a classroom teacher, eventually went on to become a guidance counselor, an assistant principal, and a principal. Over 40 years in the school system, and it's been an interesting journey, I must say. It's been a very interesting journey. I feel the children have changed immensely over the years. I remember over 40 years ago when the profession of teaching was noble and it was respected, and the children were receptive and responsive to anything that the teacher had to say. In the last few years, I think that education has changed. The children have become enabled. They've become spoiled. They've become nuisances in the classroom. They become disruptive and extremely difficult to discipline. They become, trying to think of some good words for it. They become rebellious in some manners. And unfortunately, you know, in order to redirect those behaviors, a lot of the things that we were able to do as teachers before, or consequences that we were able to put in place, are no longer able to be used. Discipline has become out of hand, and I think a lot of that stems from parenting. I think that parents have stopped parenting and have stopped disciplining their own children and want you to not discipline them as well. So therefore, you know, the classroom has become a battlefield between an adult who was once the authority and the children who are backed up by their parents.
I love how you gave the visual of the battlefield. Now, I'm going to go back a little bit. I want to rewind all the way back to the beginning of those 40 years ago. For you, why did you decide to get into teaching?
Well, I knew since I was 8 years old that I wanted to be a teacher. I had a third grade teacher. Her name was Miss Adams. And I think that was probably my first crush as a little boy. She was a first year teacher. She was young. She was pretty. She was exciting. She was full of energy and vigor and so creative. And from that point on, I think I knew I always wanted to be a teacher. In fact, when I got to high school, I took a community service class, which allowed me to go into various elementary schools in my community to see if that's really what I wanted to do, to nurture and to guide me in the career or profession that I wanted to do. And it most certainly was. I knew that helping children and guiding them and directing them and teaching them was definitely my calling right from a very young age.
That's awesome. Because when I hear you talk about it from a young age, I think very fondly of my third grade. My name is Miss Carol Berman. And I love that Miss Berman just was that teacher. She had that spark. And to this day, I still remember her. She is still teaching. It is amazing to me. She is still teaching. And she just was full of energy and excitement. And she just, every time you saw her, she was just moving. It was just like light and stereo sound with her. And she made teaching exciting. She made being a student fun. She brought the world in through her eyes. And it was just great. And to hear that you've had that same experience with the third grade teacher as well, it's not third grade, I tell you, that makes a huge difference and like opens your eyes to life. And I love that. That's why I got into it. And hearing you say that just makes me go, wow, it wasn't just me, but it felt great that it happened for me and to me. And then I think about now, in your 40 years, what was the toughest teaching assignment?
What was my teaching assignment?
The toughest one.
Oh, my toughest teaching assignment. You know, I think you've known me long enough to know that anything that was tough for me I didn't really feel like anything was a toughest for me. I felt like there were challenges, some of them more difficult than others.
Okay.
I wanted to reiterate and just go back a minute, because it was in third grade that you and I met. We were both teaching third grade that year, and I was the team leader. So, you know, it's funny that we both said we had third grade teachers that brought the love of education to us. And while we're on that, just 2 weeks ago, I was at Wawa, the gas station, and one of my third graders that I taught the same year that you and I taught together, who is now a grown man and married with children,
oh my gosh,
came up to me, tapped me on the back, and he said, "You wouldn't happen to be Mr. Padel, would you?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he literally, and I was with my cousin who can attest to this, he started crying. And he said to me, "I have been looking for you for years. I wanted you to know how much you impacted my life and how much we loved you as a teacher. You will never, ever know the things that you taught us and how you made education so passionate for all the students in your class." And he goes, "There are so many of us who have just been looking for you, and you'll never, never know the difference that you made in our lives." And you and I both know that we were teaching in an inner city school where a lot of those children had being raised by grandmothers or single parents, and there weren't a lot of men in their lives. So for a lot of the boys, I was that dad. And, you know, for me, it was like always doing the extras to make it special for my kids, like when they were cold, I would buy them sweatshirts. So when they were hungry, you know, I had the food in my room, whether they were Pop-Tarts or cereal or milk or whatever, because what kid can learn when they're hungry?
Yeah.
So, you know, it was those type of things that you and I and our team did, Miss Sutton, Miss Martin. We just made a difference like that because that's the kind of people that we were and that's who we were. But if you want to go back to saying, you know, my toughest challenge, I think maybe that my toughest challenge was I've been in a plethora of different type of schools. Maybe the inner city was the most challenging, and because those kids didn't have the same luxuries that.
What I love about when you talk about it not being tough, but being a challenge, what I love about is when you talk about it not being tough, but being a challenge. You talk about where there were kids who didn't have. And I think in this pandemic, I think for so many people, this was an eye-opener to what people have access to and what they don't have access to. And I know for me, I'm in the area now of Central Florida, and to see parents struggling and trying to get it together and tag team with this parent to make sure that, hey, we can get on you on the computer this time, we're going to get it from this time, hey, what's your password? Trying to make sure that their child was educated. I don't think many people realize that it's not a luxury to have access or even a computer in the home for many people.
I agree with you 100%, but I also think, you know, like we have basically lost 2 years of learning.
Yes.
And our children were already lagging behind a couple of years. You have now added a bigger gap. And unfortunately, I think in the future, what we're going to see is those children who were socioeconomically disadvantaged are going to be the ones who suffer the most because they did not have access to computers. They did not have the luxuries of parents who would stay home. A lot of those children were on their own. So they didn't, they were accountable for their own education and the journey that they had to travel. You know, not all students can be stakeholders in their educational journey process. They find it a difficult process where some children embrace education and take it full on and take responsibility for it. For myself, it was I kept all of my boys home. I have five boys adopted from the foster care system. All have IEPs, all are special needs, and I took on the responsibility of teaching them and sitting them at the table all day, every day. And you know, the big joke with my older boys was, there's nothing worse than being homeschooled by the principal. We can't even move. But to me, it was about the journey, and it wasn't about allowing them to be left behind. It wasn't an option. But I had people in my neighborhood say to me, can you take my kid, please? I was like, I'm not opening my own schoolhouse here. I mean, I got my own to deal with. But I felt how they were feeling, and I felt their frustrations because, you know, a lot of parents, unfortunately, are not as educated and were having problems with, like, the math and the reading, and being able to explain to their children the objectives and how to come up with answers or how to devise ways of learning. Parents didn't have the knowledge of strategies on how to teach their children. So it became a frustrating thing for the parents as well. But also what I want to add to that is I think in the near future, what is going to be one of the toughest thing is I think that we're going to see a lot of mental health issues in the future. Yeah. And I think a lot of that is from the pandemic. I think a lot of kids are going to be suffering from PTSD. I think a lot of kids are going to be dealing with emotional issues, behavior issues. And I think that we haven't even seen a tip of the iceberg yet, but we better be ready because, you know, this happened and we're going to have to learn to deal with it.
So it's interesting that you kind of piggyback on that, because that's what I left the classroom for mental health. At my last year in the classroom, I was dealing with a lot of mental health with my students. And it got to the point, I think, the climax that made me say, okay, it's time to go, is that I had a parent who honestly tried to kill herself and her child. So I knew at that point, one, mental health was needed, whether we wanted to acknowledge it as a community for education or not, go hand in hand. It's a needed resource. And then also, when you're talking about the pandemic, there are so many kids now, my new bracket is more so college, and seeing for them the experience of depression, anxiety, I'm scared to leave the house, you know, I don't have a hand sanitizer, or, you know, is it okay? Is it all right? That uncertainty. And I don't think a lot of people understand that it wasn't just for them, but everybody had it. But it seems like that generation in that area between 18 and 25 has been my largest demographic with that. So go back for a second. You talked about what you were seeing in the area of mental health. How did you take care of your mental health in the midst of the pandemic?
You know what?
Household right now.
You have always known me. I am I was a very unorthodox educator. I was a maverick. I always did what I needed to do for my kids. I would shut my door and do what I needed to do. Many of the principals recognized me as a leader and as someone who was devoted and passionate in education. As you guys used to dub me the golden boy, remember?
Yes, I do. it's the gold just for you.
Because I always have done what I needed to do to make it work for kids. I always instilled the love and the desire and the passion to want to be in school. One of the things that happened for me during the pandemic was, and what I embraced was, I have been blessed twofold because I'm a believer in what goes around comes around. And during the pandemic, I saw it and used it as an opportunity to bond with my children. And by bond, I mean, since we were learning at home or learning remotely, and I fortunately had the finances to do it, we traveled a lot and we did field trips. We went to a cabin in Tennessee for 2 weeks and hiked the trails and went to the caverns and did the waterfalls. And we went and got a beach home on the beach for a couple of weeks. And I mean, we traveled extensively and we did our work remotely from home every day till about noontime. And then I basically said to the teachers, you know, look, I got this. I've been an educator for 40 years. I know what I need to do. The rest of their assignments in the afternoon, you can put them on Clever and we'll get back to them later. Fortunately, 3 out of 5 of my kids had specials in the afternoon. So after lunch, it was pretty much an early day anyway. So it actually worked to my advantage. So I kind of took it as an opportunity to teach my children worldly things and travel and go places and learn about the world. And those are those kind of field trips that they don't even take anymore. I mean, they don't even take kids anywhere anymore. So I just felt like it was a perfect time to provide those experiences with my children and also bond with them. And hopefully it will work to my advantage. And I think that for my kids, and I can't speak for everybody else, because like I said, all of my kids have IEPs. One has a 504. So they have their own challenges. But I think that like it worked to their advantage because I was able to give them that one-on-one that each one of them needs on their individual educational plan, individualized educational plan. And nobody knows your kids better than you. So when you know your kids and you know what their needs are, you can actually focus on those objectives and pinpoint the things that they really need and go hard on them.
I love it. I love that I call exposure tours. You call them experiences and I call them exposure tours. That's my whole thing. I mean, taking the time to expose the kids to more than what's just in the neighborhood, but different types of lifestyle, different things that's going on. And I have to be honest, I haven't been to the sea yet, so I'm looking forward to this. Now that I'm hearing you're getting cabins, I'm like, okay, I like this experience. I like hearing this. So it sounds like really... Next, I really love this. You talked about how education has changed. Now we're in a space where they have thrown away another standardized test and got something new. Now, I have my personal feelings that every time we throw away one test, the next test is worse. It's always been that way for me. I've always thought that way because it's like as soon as we understand what to do, now you're throwing in another wrench in the game plan. How do you feel parents can, do you feel parents can be prepared? If they can, how can we help prepare the parents?
You know, when I started teaching decades ago, we were able to be creative. We were able to be innovative. We were able to take our children home with us on weekends and have sleepovers and pool parties and... I remember when I taught with you, I took my kids out to dinner. And we did things like that. Nowadays, you know, unfortunately, because there are good and bad people in the world, you know, things have changed. And there's a lot going on with unprofessional adults who somehow slithered into the profession and made things difficult. We weren't being tested all of the time back then. How do we prepare children for tests when after COVID they're already 2 years behind? How do we assess them correctly? Because we know their needs are going to be plentiful. So I think it's going to be a difficult task for all of us. I did read an article, I want to say about a week ago, where Florida is thinking of getting rid of testing altogether. And I think, you know, what some people need to consider is, which hasn't been considered in a long time, is school is not for everybody. And I used to tell my kids that when I was a teacher. I said, you know, there are a lot of trades out there. We need mechanics. We need carpenters. We need electricians. We need chefs. We need to go back to some of those home studies that we used to have, or those schools where you could go and you could develop your talents in the kitchen or under a car hood or under the sink where it's dripping, because I believe some of those jobs are going to be in demand in the future, because everybody is like, oh, you got to be a doctor, you got to be a lawyer, you have to be a scientist. And I think, you know, it's not for everybody. It's just, it's hard. And, you know, like I said earlier, not all kids are test takers. I know personally, when I was a child, I would freeze when a test came in front of me. And I know I was a good student. I know I had great grades. But when that test came in front of me, I had anxiety. I was nervous. And, you know, those things, I think when you're a teacher in a classroom, you can assess children that way. And you know your kids. People who grade these tests, they don't know these kids. They don't know what they're going through. They don't know how they function. And I think that all of those things aside, they never take those things into accountability. And that's where our problem comes with testing, because I don't think that any test we ever develop will truly be able to assess any child.
I totally agree with you on that, because for me, I was the kid who would study all night, sit up, know it back and forth. And the minute you put the paper in front of me, it would go white. And I've even had that happen as an adult when it came to testing for standardized stuff, or even for my licenses for things. And I know for me, if somebody would say, show me that skill, I could do it. But I, as you said, there's going to have to be a way that we understand that every kid doesn't learn the same. I think the big thing for me during the pandemic that was the big bother was that every kid's not a child yet. And I remember, I don't know if my neighbor, I don't know if they knew I heard it or not, but I kept hearing, you just won't get it. And I'm like, because that's not a computer baby. This baby may need hands-on. This baby may need a song. This baby may need to do something else to get the concept. Every baby is not a computer sit in front of this keyboard and type kid. And I have to be very honest, I was so shocked to see four-year-olds sitting at a computer for pre-K. I was like, wow, that's going to be interesting. Because to me, the first thing I think of is social skills. How are you going to socialize in this world?
Remember now, students in grades K-1 and 2 have never really had any formal education because we lost 2 years. Wow. So if you really think about it, kids in second, first, kindergarten, even VPK have never been in a school environment. So, I mean, the whole process of learning, you know, sitting with other kids, you know, especially like unfortunately in today's society, when little kids do things wrong, people laugh and they think it's cute when a child says, no, no, no. Then you put 16 or 18 of those kids in a classroom with one teacher who don't understand the concept of stop or the word no, because mommy and daddy and everybody else thought it was cute for them not to stop doing what they were doing. And therefore, you know, you end up disciplining 60-70% of your day. And unfortunately, those that are there to learn suffer because you're busy redirecting the children who don't understand the process of you need to listen, follow directions, and no, that's not cute.
So now that we've kind of looked at the problem, what would be the tips? Are they able to help us get this together? Because like you said, we've lost this time. Are there any tips that parents can take and go with them?
Well, you know, to piggyback on something I said earlier, one of the most difficult things I found during the COVID experience is children do not want to learn from their parents. I have tutored children in the neighborhood. I have tutored other children. And it's always, I've had exceptional outcomes. But there is nothing more frustrating to a parent than teaching your own offspring or your own children because they see you in a different light, you know? And it's very, very difficult. I think what we need to focus on now as parents that our children are back in school is being role models for our kids. We need to build up our relationship that has been damaged because we've been homeschooling our kids. People have lost their, they lost their control with their kids. They've been angry at them. We've lost our cool. So it's time that they're back in school now that we rebuild our relationships with our family, that we bring family values back, that we talk to our kids. So put your cell phone down or turn it off and have a conversation with your child. My last few years as a principal, the one thing that made me the angriest is when I was at the car loop at the end of the day, at the beginning of the day, when parents would pull up in a school zone on my campus and be on their phone, they wouldn't even say, you know, goodbye to their child getting out of the car or I love you. Or even when they were picking up, they were engaged in conversations on their cell phones. And I started a rule that no parent was allowed on their phone during pickup and drop off. Because I felt it was, I even had an open house to discuss it with the parents. Like, this is your time to communicate with your children. We need to bring back some of the traditional family values that we have where you don't have electronics and computers and TVs on when you're eating dinner at night, when you're having breakfast in the morning. We need to communicate and teach these children these values because the family values have gone. As far as teachers, I think teachers need to really, really be on point now. They need to know their subject matter back and forth. They need to know that there really is no more downtime. I mean, we can laugh about that because when we talk together, we had a little bit of downtime. We had some time to show a video or to do things like that. But we're literally in a world now where we have to catch these kids up and we have to pick up where we left off. And unfortunately, not unfortunately, to our advantage is that we have all lost this time. So it's a generational makeup because we're all behind. So we need to all move forward together. And of course, we're always going to have those who are responsible stakeholders and accountable for their own education and will excel no matter what they do or where we are or what happens. But we need to take the rest of the population and move forward with them. And so, you know, our plea now is
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.